afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
Happy hump day to you, too. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today. I'm going to get started on the market report, but first, I do want to make an announcement. From very early this morning until about 3 o'clock Eastern time, Comcast had a business phone outage across the country. And there was places from California, Oregon, Chicago, just everywhere, Florida. So not sure if they were hacked. I'd have to say they were hacked to have that type of outage. I don't know if that's common or not. But phones did come back up a little after 3 o'clock. So you listeners and buyers and clients, if you were looking and calling Discount Gold and Silver Trading, give us a call because phones are now working. So they are up and working. So 1-800-375-4188. And let's go ahead and get to the gold prices today. We have gold. Well, it was up earlier today, over 1,300. Couldn't keep it, though. Up about a buck at $1,297. Silver's up a little over 1%, up 18 cents today at $16.75. Platinum was up $5 at $909. And palladium was up 23, a little over 2% at $1,021. The U.S. DX today was down 0.24 at 93.64. Crude oil was down 46 cents at 65.06. Paper markets had a big day today, as I last looked about an hour and a half ago. I figured I didn't need to look anymore until the program. And yes, they were up big, up 346 points on the Dow, 25,145. You have the NASDAQ up 51, 7,689. The S&P up 23 at 2,772. And let's go see. 10-year yield up 0.06 as begin to approach that 3% level again, 2.98. The euro was stronger, 1.18. And everything is fine. Everything is good. You know, the tariffs don't matter. The deficits don't matter. Nothing matters. Isn't it great to live in this land, in this la-la land, Dave?
Oh, a land of great imagination, said Alice in Wonderland.
Yes. And, but she is no Alice, or maybe she is. We have Wendy Wilson joining us with Apothecary Herbs, and she joins us every Wednesday, and we're so thankful to have her on the program. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melly. Thanks for the intro, and hello, Dave.
Hey there, Wendy.
Yeah, we thought we'd talk about some medication shortages that are becoming more of a reality. You know, because, you know, you can recall some devastating disasters that have created some shortages for medicines like diabetic insulin and antibiotics. So Americans are, you know, have kind of expressed this, you know, confidence that what could happen in third world countries could not happen here. But lately, they're rethinking that as some changes have happened and patients are being taken off meds for substitute drugs because they can't get them anymore. So we're going to take a look at this bigger picture, and a big potential problem could be down the road, which, you know, could leave patients and physicians a bit blindsided, wondering what to do. So recently in London, some reports out of there have surfaced that they're unable to obtain adequate supplies of antibiotics. And this has left physicians prescribing other meds that could put their patients at risk and allow bacteria to grow. So here's a quote from the Access Medicine Foundation, May 31st, 2018. They say, there's an emerging crisis in the global anti-infectives market as fragile drug supply chains come close to collapse. Anybody hear about this in the national news?
No.
All right. Well, apparently the big suppliers of your antibiotic drugs are coming up dry, and they've been struggling with their supply since 2016. They are having trouble providing drugs like combo antibiotic IVs for intensive cares like the tazobactam, the pepicillin. They are also having trouble with shortages in 39 countries, including Germany and Brazil, with another bezethine penicillin. It's a drug that's often used for sexually transmitted diseases and rheumatic heart disease. So those are big problems. And, you know, for this, it can't happen in the U.S. Well, the U.S. National Library of Medicine and Institutes of Health have something else to impart to Americans. They said that these drugs usually aren't made on U.S. soil. Americans think 75% of our drugs are made here, and it's not. Anybody want to guess? How much is made here?
20%.
You're close. Yep. Most of the drugs aren't made in the United States anymore. So here's a quote from Access Medicine Foundation. They say things are getting worse because the market's not fixing the problem despite the expansion in the need for antibiotics. They go on to say global demand for antibiotics has grown by 2/3 since the year 2000. It's driven by population growth and the need for medicines to fight more infectious diseases in low and middle income countries. So anybody want to guess why there's low inventory?
Tell us.
Well, as with most things, the market is driven by profit, right? So as patents expire on drugs and become generic options, and they're available, and they make less money, they don't produce, they have a very low profit margin for the drug company. So what they tend to do is they shift their attention to new drugs in development, and then many of the drugs that are generic are going to be shifted to be made in countries outside the U.S. because of profit reasons. So facilities in other countries that don't have the same FDA guidelines as in the United States are therefore more likely to be making these drugs, and they're going to offer more risk. So there's really not enough FDA inspectors to check all the international drug facilities. So we recently saw a problem with U.S. hospitals being able to get those IV drip solutions made in Puerto Rico because of their hurricane, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So they had devastating storm, and Access Medicine Foundation says this. They say the rise in shortages has gone hand in hand with a wave of companies making their generic drugs by reducing the number of their supplies on their individual product lines, and generic drugs by pharmaceutical giants are pushed to smaller facilities to manufacture them, as in India and Puerto Rico. So reports are really focusing on your antibiotics for now, but this can happen. These shortages can happen to any kind of medication that goes generic, such as cardiovascular or diabetic meds. An example would be the sporadic shortages in your EpiPen. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. All right, so as with the Puerto Rico storm devastation, it can halt production in their IV saline drip products and even other drugs. So, ever wonder what other drugs are made in Puerto Rico? Anybody want to take a guess?
No, but we're going to talk a little bit about Puerto Rico later on, and that is one of the there used to be big tax breaks, and a lot of pharmaceuticals mm-hmm. went down to Puerto Rico,
right?
And then they started to pull out because
The FDA is really not releasing shortages due to the storm that ravaged Puerto Rico. Actually, Puerto Rico is really home, as you know, to the big giants: Johnson and mm-hmm. Johnson, Pfizer,
yep.
Eli Lilly, Amgen, Bristol Myers, Squibb, AbbVie, Merck, Baxter, and others. So Puerto Rico, as it's in tatters still because of the hurricane, they don't have all their production lines.
I had no idea those were mm-hmm. all located in Puerto Rico.
Well, they have a lot of their drugs being manufactured there because there's been a blackout on the information from the drug companies and the FDA what drugs are affected by the Puerto Rican storm. Most the FDA has really done told American hospitals there's going to be shortages. So InsightUS.com actually reviewed some government documents on the industry in Puerto Rico, and they kind of pieced together the list of medicines that may be hard to get. and they noted that on the list included 20 of the top selling drugs. So Enbrel for autoimmune diseases, Remicade for immune suppressive therapies, Juneva, diabetic medicine, Lyrica, nerve and muscle pain meds for diabetics, Crestor, statin cholesterol drug, Neulasta for post-cancer treatment and white blood cells, Xarelto for blood clots, and Eliquis for deep vein thrombosis clots.
Wow.
Now, the other medicines that they make are down there, they included for the generic kind are medicines for pain management, diabetes, cancer, bacterial infection antibiotics, cardiovascular disease drugs, cholesterol drugs, depression drugs, birth control drugs, osteoporosis drugs, anesthesia, Crohn's disease meds, migraine headache meds, schizophrenia drugs, antiviral HIV drugs, arthritis meds, ulcers for ulcerative colitis, attention deficit disorder drugs, and epilepsy. Now, this is what Scott Gulby, he's with the FDA, says about the conditions down there in Puerto Rico with regard to your drug makers. He says a lot of the companies say that they're online, but they basically have one of five lines running at 20%. It's unclear when they are going to be able to bring that up to full capacity. We are monitoring 40 pharmaceutical and biological drug products for which a shortage will have substantial impact on public health. End of quote. None of your media is covering this.
No, they're not. And you know what's really irritating? Because, you know, what I was going to talk about today was Puerto Rico's debt, the bankers, the Wall Street. They're the ones that created a lot of their problems for their ability to come back after this storm. So where is this big pharma? Why aren't they in there helping with the infrastructure, with the power and so forth? I mean, sure, it doesn't fall on their shoulders, but they should be in there. I'm sure they're wealthy enough.
Well, if they've pushed the generic lines to Puerto Rico manufacturing facilities, they're not going to be that worried about helping because their profit margins are lower on the generics. So,
but it's still healthy.
I know. Most of the prescription drugs are made overseas. In October 2012, they, according to the U.S. National Library of Medicine, they were questioning the safety of these medicines made outside the U.S. They said most Americans and Canadians don't know that many of our pharmaceuticals come from places like India and China. How much of it comes from there? They said most of it. Nearly all the aspirin products are made in China, producing 120 billion tablets a year. Almost all your heartburn and cholesterol drugs come from there and from Puerto Rico, end of quote. So, yeah. And, you know, and the FDA hasn't been inspecting a lot of the international pharmaceutical manufacturing facilities because they haven't had enough money and enough inspectors. According to the U.S. Government Accountability Office, in their report, the FDA's inspector program would need $71 million annually to adequately inspect 3,249 foreign drug manufacturers that are registered with the FDA. And they currently spend $13 million, and China alone would cost $16 million to inspect their 714 million facilities. So, you know, basically, you've got 76% of your drugs are coming into Canada from foreign facilities. And one question I had was, okay, so let's say we send a foreign, an FDA inspector over to foreign soil to inspect. You know, if there's violations, what kind of power does the FDA have on them? Well, it really depends if the U.S. has a mutual recognition agreement with that country. And so they may have no power at all. And according to PharmTech, it's really kind of strange when FDA does go over to foreign places like China and India to inspect drug makers. They say they actually have to schedule out far in advance the visit, and the visit is very limited and short in duration.
Wonder why.
Yeah. So, they're trying. The FDA is kind of making some changes, a 27% increase in international inspections. Actually, more letters now for violations are going overseas than they are here in the U.S. But they need billions of dollars to bring that program back up to capability. Because do you know how often they used to inspect foreign drug makers? Here in the United States, the FDA inspects every 2 years. You know how often they inspect foreign makers?
Mm-mm.
Every 10 years.
Jeez. Wow.
So we got a drug shortage, and people, you know, may find themselves hostage to their medicines.
And all this cheap pharma coming into this country, and we pay the highest premiums on medications than anywhere else in the world, you know.
Well, and that problem with heparin.
We subsidize the world, yeah.
Right, and that problem with that heparin drug that came from China and killed many, many people because it was adulterated. Okay, mm-hmm. So the Chinese have no problem substituting ingredients. They run out of one thing, I'll just throw that in there, you know?
Yeah, but I have clients who buy their medication from China because of the costs.
Right, well, I mean, you know, I was just talking to somebody.
It's the risk they take.
I was talking to somebody the other day who has eye drops for something, and it was like $250 for like 0.01 ounces. I'm like, okay, that's like 3 days of treatment, right?
Jeez.
I know, and so it's insane. It really is. So really,
but you buy that same item somewhere else in the world, and it probably costs a buck and a quarter.
You know, it's all messed up. The whole healthcare system really, I mean, I don't think the word overhaul covers it, you know. I'm sorry. I think people are just are starting to get the idea that, you know, so I'm on this lifelong drug to help me manage symptoms of cardiac or insulin or something else, and I'm really not getting better. I'm just trying to stay ahead of my symptom problem. And
trying
so
to stay you're, alive in some cases.
Right. And so you're, and that's the problem. You're not addressing the cause of it. And most often when we get a lot of these internal medicine disorders, it's lifestyle. If it's not genetics, it's usually lifestyle. So we have a lot of power changing lifestyle. And you can actually change DNA in a week going to a healthier diet. So I think people should start being more proactive and taking their responsibility back and learning how to strengthen their specific weak areas while they wean off of these drugs that will hold them hostage in a crisis. It's really going to be bad. You're going to see rationing and even withholding of meds in some instances, and it's going to be really bad.
You know, I agree with you, and I think with everything being so computerized and in the way we're being tracked, mm-hmm. Everything we consume, if we don't live the right lifestyle, if we don't adjust, the computer will make the decision on who gets what.
Yeah, that artificial intelligence.
I know a lot of people think that, well, that wouldn't happen. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
Well, it's going to.
Well, look at Amazon, 1,000 robots. They're getting rid of employees. Okay, so it's moving in that direction. Technology's taken off. And so people need to do as much as they can for their health as they can. And that's what we help people do, recognize they have a lot of power in strengthening their systems. And they don't have to rely on toxic chemicals if they don't want to.
Hey, Wendy, give us some contact. We're just about running out of time.
Sure. Toll-free number for a free product catalog from Apothecary Herbs, 866-229-3663. ThePowerHerbs.com is the website, or 866-229-3663.
Alrighty, thank you, Wendy. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, as always, just such great information. And we have some financial information that we'll be going over right after this short break.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we're going to get started right away so we are able to finish up everything that we want to talk to you about. And there's a lot of news out there today. And let's see, mortgage applications.
All right. We've lost Melody temporarily. Melody was in the process of talking about mortgage applications are up 4.1%. It took a few weeks, but borrowers finally took notice of a drop in mortgage interest rates. After falling for a month, mortgage application volume jumped 4.1% last week over the previous week, that according to the Mortgage Banker Association. Volume was 2% lower than a year ago, however, largely due to weakness in refinancings. The average contract interest rate for the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage with conforming loan balances of roughly $450,000 or less decreased to 4.75% from 4.84 the week before. That's the lowest rate since the week ending April 20th. Well, as most listeners know, mortgage rates began rising at the start of this year and moved sharply higher in early April. The pullback in rates began 2 weeks ago. Mortgage rates have, as we've been telling you, loosely follow the yield on the 10-year Treasury bond. Joel Kahn, who's an MBA economist, says that concerns over Italy's political turmoil and questions about the possible imposition of trade tariffs by the U.S. on its major trade partners pushed Treasury rates lower this week. Now, applications to refinance a home loan increased 4% from the previous week, but were 17% lower than a year ago. Interest rates were lower last spring. Mortgage applications to purchase a home also increased 4% for the week and were 9% higher than a year ago. Home buyers today are facing a short supply of homes for sale and fast rising prices to boot. Higher mortgage rates were only adding to the pain, so the brief drop may have gotten some potential buyers off the fence. Buyers are also turning to mortgage products that offer lower rates. The adjustable rate mortgage share of activity, for example, increased to 7% of total applications. ARMs, as you know, offer lower rates for shorter fixed terms, normally 1, 3, and 5 years. Then they adjust higher or lower depending on the market conditions at the time. Mortgage rates did begin moving higher again at the end of last week and into this week. Rates are expected to move steadily higher the rest of this year, despite temporary fluctuations. Now, notably, you know, the affordable home shortage is going to continue through the year. That's according to a new Reuters poll. Housing prices have regained losses since the Great Recession, but home ownership remains unaffordable for many because supply just hasn't kept up with demand. U.S. housing prices will rise at twice the speed of inflation and pay. They're forecasted to increase by 4.3% next year and 3.6% in 2020. The pricier market is likely to push people to rent instead of buy. But even rent in major U.S. cities are becoming more and more expensive than average income increases. So increasing mortgage rates are also contributing to the lack of affordable housing options. Now, on another note, Mexico hit back at the U.S. on Tuesday after imposing tariffs on around $3 billion worth of American pork, steel, cheese, and a couple of other goods. That was in response to our administration's steel and aluminum levies, further straining relations between the two countries as we struggle to rewrite the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. The tariffs, which were announced last week, came into effect as the Trump administration threw another complication into the fractious NAFTA talks. Officials are now saying they want to splinter discussions with Canada and Mexico and work on separate agreements rather than continue three-country discussions to rewrite the 1994 trade deal. Larry Kudlow, President Trump's chief economic advisor, said yesterday that Mr. Trump's preference now, and quote, he asked me to convey this, is to actually negotiate with Mexico and Canada separately. Mr. Kudlow, speaking on Fox and Friends, said pursuing separate deals might allow an agreement to be reached more rapidly, adding, and again I'm quoting him, I think that's the key point. You know, NAFTA has kind of dragged on, end quote.
I'm back.
Melody, do I hear you back? Hey.
Yes, I am. And I want to tell the listeners again, our phone lines are out. Comcast is having additional problems, so I don't know what's happening with Comcast, but Todd was able to connect me by phone. So
thank you, Todd.
You should have heard what I was saying. I thought you were the one who dropped off.
we're talking about Mexico hitting back with tariffs on pork, cheese, and other goods. Talking about the Trump administration's desire now to split the three-way talks into two-way talks between Mexico and Canada. Do you want to take it from there, or do you want me to continue?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I can add a few little comments in there. Where, you know, we had the 25% steel tariffs and the 10% aluminum tariffs, and on as of June 1st to Mexico and Canada as part of the campaign. And so we also know that those tariffs were put on the European Union, Japan, and other countries, you know, trying to stop the flow of imported metals. And I'm going to try to pull up my report today that I had earlier today on the new deficit, trade deficit numbers. And I mean, it really is a shocking number of the amount of imports from China. They send to us almost four times more than what we send to them, that we sell to them. And that's an incredible number. And the first four of the top 10 items that we import from China is basically technology, cell phones, computers. It's all technology based. And the tariffs that we're putting on, you know, it's, you know, and I do believe there should be separate agreements with each country. I don't think you should have a group like, you know, what we've had in the past. Well, I do go along with that, having separate trade agreements with Canada and Mexico. But they're still threatening to strike back on their own. And, you know, I don't buy that they're targeting the Republican states. I just think that, you know, hey, if they're going to target the agriculture, that's going to be middle America, you know. So But some of the items are going to be hogs, apples, potatoes, dairy. I mean, it certainly could have an impact at the grocery store.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Kudlow also insisted that the president wasn't planning to withdraw from NAFTA.
Well, he should.
which, as we know, he has threatened to do. However, splitting the current three-way deal into two separate bilateral agreements, observers say, is going to likely require the nullification of the three-way NAFTA agreement. You know, last Friday, Trump said he'd be interested in pursuing separate deals. And he said accurately, these are two very different countries. And he said, I like free trade, but I also want fair trade. They can't believe they've gotten away with this for so many decades. Now, people, familiar with the deliberation say the idea of separate talks is really aimed at pressuring Canada. Which American negotiators see as obstructionist and also as an impediment to the progress of the NAFTA negotiations. On top of the growing tension between us and our European allies, leaving China aside for the moment, things are going to be very interesting. Guys like Kudlow and the trade representatives, Wilbur Ross included, and their teams are going to be extremely busy, it sounds like, over the next year and a half, 2 years, Melody.
I think so, too. I mean, and I, if I remember correctly, all right, Kudlow is not a fan of tariffs, so he's kind of having to swallow or bite his tongue while he talks about the benefits of a bilateral agreement with Canada and Mexico. But you would also think there are ways in which you can extract yourself from NAFTA, but I mean, it's just not, I'm doing it today. I mean, it's a longer period of time and things have to be done and so forth. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I mean, it takes longer than tomorrow to get out of the agreement. We'll have to see how that goes on. But there was a Global Economic Prospects report that was published yesterday, and this multinational finance organization, they had a very grim forecast for both the emerging and the developed markets with these commercial disputes that are underway between these major economies. And if these disputes intensify, the report had said that a broad-based increase in tariffs worldwide would have major adverse consequences for trade and activity. And we'll see how these tariffs are ramped out, if they're, bound to these rates, if this is just a tit for tat and I'm going to flex my muscles here and you're going to flex your muscles there, but we're all in agreement. This is about trade and, we got to keep the system flowing and, we don't want to go back to the global crisis that we saw in 2008 and 2009. Of course, it's my personal opinion we're heading there anyway, so this is just going to add an additional pressure, and perhaps, maybe this will bring us to the head as far as the global system beginning to unwind.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the World Trade Bank issued a report, just issued a report saying short of a full trade war, the uncertainty stemming from the threat of these major economic policy shifts in economies across the globe would negatively affect financial markets and activity worldwide. And, their dire warnings are similar to the forecasts by S&P Ratings and the European Central Bank, both of which have predicted, a shrinkage in global growth by up to 1% if trade tariffs were to expand. It looks like a broad consensus among international lenders and finance organizations sees more harm than good coming from a trade war, and even simply the threat of one. It makes you wonder why this volatility in and of itself and the uncertainty it's created hasn't pushed gold and silver up to where we think it ought to be. That time is coming, but boy, it's been frustrating watching that ride, huh?
Well, I think this is true. I think, you know, those that control the markets, you know, I think they get that they don't feel this is going to, perhaps it won't upend, that they will eventually all come to an agreement, because they don't want to see the world financial system come unwound. It's kind of like no one really believed that, you know, we'd go to nuclear war with North Korea. I mean, who would want that? Everybody says, you know, well, nobody's going to hit the button because, you know, it's just too much damage. And, you know, the markets didn't pay any attention because they knew that it most likely possible, but not probable. And right. So this could be the same thing as far as what we're seeing with gold. And what I really see with gold is really the attachment to the dollar anymore, you know, and it does respond quickly with any change in the U.S. dollar. So, again, to me, that also tells me there's a lot of pressure on that dollar. And we know Larry Kudlow is he's a strong dollar advocate. He'll say and do anything to make sure that dollar is showing strength. But with the amount of debt we have, it goes against the ability to service the debt and so forth. It's a strong dollar. You need a weaker dollar. So, you know, it can make your head spin. And I think what the listeners should need to know is, you know, we talk about what could happen with these tariffs. It doesn't mean that we're against the tariffs. It doesn't mean that I don't think that they should happen. A long time ago when they were eliminated, they shouldn't have been eliminated. There's been previous presidents who've tried to put the tariffs back on, and they were all unsuccessful because it had so much effect on the economy. You know, we've had tariffs on steel for a long time. You know, we've had tariffs on some other things, but it depends on how much they want to go. I know Bush tried tariffs. I can't recall off the top of my head all the presidents. I'm not sure if Obama did so it is difficult to change. You know, once we've been down this road, it's difficult to change direction. So, you know, we'll see. But what I do know, it's not good for those who hold dollars. It's not good for those that are in the stock market. It's not good for those who are trying to preserve their purchasing power by holding paper. You have to hold gold and silver. It came out that Medicare's financial problems are getting worse. Social Security problems are getting worse. There was a report yesterday that Medicare's giant trust fund for inpatient care not going to be able to cover the projected medical bills starting in 2026. That's not that far away. And that's 3 years earlier than previously expected. So wait until next year. It might be 3 years earlier than that. It might be 2023. Social Security is going to become insolvent in 2034. So, again, you know, we have President Trump who says he won't cut Social Security, Medicare, but, you know, every politician up there does. They talk about it all the time, talking about cutting the entitlement, that something has to be done. And we'll have to talk about that when we get back because we're heading into a break, so please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom with my wonderful co-host, Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Studerstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-3... Oh, I hate giving out the phone number. It's not working. Yeah. Although it might be. 1-800-375-4188. Actually, I should give you a Comcast number, and everybody should call them and tell them to, hey, come on, get on the ball. Get your stuff working.
1-800-COMCAST.
That's it. I've been dialing it all day.
Jeez.
And but 1-800-375-4188. Give us a call. We got some great specials. And since I didn't have the phone service today and I got busy, we got some great prices on all the coins. We'll continue the little special 550, the 1/10th ounce American Gold Eagle with 20 Silver Eagles, and those are dated 2018. It does include your shipping cost, $550. You can buy one of those packages or 100. We have enough for 200, so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Yesterday, if you remember, we ran out of time, and on Monday, I should say Monday, not yesterday, but on Monday, we ran out of time, and we were going to talk about Puerto Rico and some of the numbers that are coming out about the aftermath of the Hurricane Maria last fall, and I got a lot of stuff on it, so Dave, why don't you go ahead and finish up your discussion on that topic right now.
Sure, thanks. You know, as we were talking about on Monday, disaster assistance funded by U.S. taxpayers isn't cheap. That's where we're just starting to go. Congress has appropriated over $136 billion in disaster relief, Melody, in 2017 and this year. Because of the damages from hurricanes and the California wildfires and other calamities. The levels of response, however, coordinated by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and other federal departments to last year's three major hurricanes shows a stark contrast. 9 days after Maria hit in September, 1.6 million meals had been delivered to Puerto Rico, while 5.1 million had been delivered after Harvey, and 10.9 million after Irma. Over the same time period, 2.8 million liters of water had been delivered to Puerto Rico, compared to 4.5 million after Harvey and $7 million liters after Irma. And 9 days after Maria, FEMA and other federal agencies had sent 10,000 workers to Puerto Rico. The same period, 30,000 had been sent to Harvey in Texas mainly, and 22,000 after Irma, mainly to Florida. Now, on average, FEMA's provided about $3,000 in housing assistance to Puerto Rican households to help repair their homes. That's compared to almost 7,000 to Texans affected by Hurricane Harvey. The need for tarps was especially severe, with almost 500,000 homes and businesses badly damaged or destroyed FEMA needed hundreds of thousands of tarps, but just 5,000 were delivered 9 days after Maria, 20 times less than what was delivered after Irma, and 4 times less than after Harvey. Although the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has installed nearly 60,000 temporary roofs since September, many of them are tarps, tens of thousands of homes reportedly still are roofless. And many of those properties' occupants, Melody, have been sleeping for over 8 months now in their cars, on their balconies, or in makeshift homeless shelters. And only 21,000 households have received federal aid to carry out permanent repairs to make their houses livable and occupiable again. The remaining tens of thousands of homeowners have only until June 18th to submit their applications for housing assistance. Unfortunately, many of them can't locate their deeds as required proof of ownership, either because of damage, destruction to their homes, or to banks and other places that had housed them. To make matters worse, the current school year is set to finish with more than a third of the island's school shuttered, perhaps forever. I mean, the closing of 167 public schools a year ago seemed drastic. But now, after the widespread physical and emotional and financial devastation that was left by Maria, another 265 schools are going to be shut down starting this summer. These latest closings are said to be the result of a sharp drop in enrollment that began during the Great Recession and worsened big time after last year's hurricane, with many families simply giving up and leaving the island for the mainland. Now, that's only adding to Puerto Rico's unrest, where only 10% of 7th, 8th, and 11th graders achieved proficiency in standardized math tests last year. But the turmoil extends far beyond the loss of schools. For the first time in the country's history, the formation of charter schools and the use of vouchers have been authorized. And that's further creating a divide between a discontented and now a divided populace. As a result, Puerto Rican government estimates that by the end of 2018, more than 200,000 of the country's approximate 3.3 million residents will have left the island permanently for the mainland U.S. because of Maria's lasting impact. That's in addition to the 500,000 Puerto Ricans who left for states like Florida, Texas, Pennsylvania, and New York over the previous decade. It's not that they wanted to go either. They've just found they can't stay. Maria has only exacerbated the exodus. Together, Melody, in my mind, this is just unacceptable, even disgraceful. And the 2018 hurricane season officially started last Friday. Now, you know, if you want to do something about this, our islander citizens still need help. You know, if you want to donate money, clothing, or non-perishable goods, visit the websites of one of these organizations, and we have the contact info for these places on our Facebook page at DGS Coins. Places like Puerto Rico We Care, the Puerto Rico Family Institute, Casa Pueblo, the Hurricane Maria Community Relief and Recovery Fund, Grupo Guayacan, I guess you pronounce it, Friends of Puerto Rico, and of course, the International Red Cross. Folks, this isn't just about whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, a liberal or a conservative, a paper or a precious metal investors, although hopefully you're the latter. It's about doing the right thing as an American. Again, you may rightfully ask, what in God's name does any of this have to do with gold and silver? The answer, well, our response to the ongoing crisis in Puerto Rico has fallen woefully short. And that's putting it diplomatically in my mind. Why am I so passionate about this issue? Well, mainly because my daughter is of Puerto Rican ancestry. It's as simple as that. To put it bluntly, ladies and gentlemen, our reaction has been bordering on un-American. It's about time we practice what we preach and treat our fellow Americans as we ourselves would want to be treated in similar circumstances. It's called the Golden Rule. That's what this has to do about gold and silver. Melody, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it is a humanitarian issue. But I mean, there's a lot of examples and lessons to be learned from this.
Absolutely.
And I think less, you know, and, you know, when we look to, you know, when you depend on government agencies in true times of need, they're not going to be there. And again, this is comes back to the finances of being prepared, preparing for worst case scenarios, and having your, wherever you live, being, knowing where you live, being familiar with your surroundings, and learning to take care of yourself. That's where our freedoms begin. But Puerto Rico truly is it's a sad story. Citizens are at fault. Banks are at fault. Politicians are at fault. Wall Street is at fault. Everyone has the people, of course, were taken advantage of. But, you know, when things are good, you know, we turn a blind eye. We don't pay attention when things are going well. It's the same thing, and I'm going to relate a lot of what is happening in Puerto Rico to here to the United States. And it just isn't the power grid in Puerto Rico that was failing prior to the hurricane. It was their water pumping stations, their fridges, their levees, the bridges, their levees, their roads. They were all starved for investment for years. People's homes, they weren't as strong as they should have been. The island, you know, Wendy was talking about pharmaceutical inspectors from the FDA. Well, before the storm, the island could only afford about 5 building code inspectors for a population of 3.5 million people. And the problem? Well, government loves to borrow money. And what's interesting, just today while we were talking about this, there was a court ruling, litigation over future sales tax revenues. The Puerto Rico sales tax back COFINA debt did rally. There were court filings revealed a new agreement to settle the long-running dispute with general obligation debt creditors. So now their future sales tax revenues isn't going to go to the people of Puerto Rico. It's going to go back into the people who created the situation to begin with. And, I mean, it's just truly mind-boggling. And it's happening right here in the United States. So their infrastructure was crumbling. We have government. We had the Puerto Rican government who couldn't pay its bills. The current mayor called it a big Ponzi scheme. The banks thought that they were actually helping people. That they were doing nothing wrong. And they didn't fall into this financial ruin all on its own. Wall Street kept pushing the Puerto Rico government's loans, even as the island was teetering on default. With the zeal that bank insiders are, they are now describing it as maybe unethical, maybe immoral. Oh, come on. You know, it's truly amazing. There was a top bank Puerto Rican banker, Carlos Capacetti. He says it doesn't end, and there's no help coming. In the financial crisis, Puerto Ricans are the ones left holding the bag. And he's right. It's the people that get stuck holding the bag while everybody just stripped their communities. So it was, again, the government was desperate for cash, and you have banks and investment houses on Wall Street that made millions off that desperation. And some of those banks found ways to make even more money that risked the financial future of not only the island, but thousands of the residents as well. The bonds, many of them were specifically designed to be sold to Puerto Ricans. They were packaged. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, when anything is packaged, you know you're not getting the best end of the deal. You know, again, when you go back to 2008, look at the mortgages and all the derivatives and everything that was packaged together into a little neat little bundle. Well, that's what they did to the Puerto Ricans. They packaged into special funds that were not transparent. And the regulators, they do less than, there were no regulators. And what are we having here in this country? All of our regulations, they're being dropped. So we're going to have the same problem. There won't be any transparency in any of our financial, not in any of them, but again, the banks are back to doing what they know how to do best. But according to the court records filed in the aftermath of the island's economic calamity, brokers stole thousands of these special funds. This left hundreds of millions of dollars of the island's wealth concentrated in increasingly tenuous investments. This banker, Capistetti, says he learned it was even worse than it looked. He said a client warned him that some brokers on the island were pushing Puerto Rican investors who already had so much of their retirement or personal savings in these funds to borrow. I mean, these people have no, you know, they will tell you to do anything, and if you're there, they will take it from you.
You know, it almost, Melody, to just to interrupt you briefly, a thought just came to mind, that it almost seems as, I mean, we've talked about, you know, the predatory loan crisis that led in part, if not largely, to the Great Recession. And if there's another predatory lending scheme that's coming back to haunt not just this island of 3.5 million people, but, you know, it's going to end up haunting the Congress of the United States, is all this lending that's taken place over the last 15, 20 years to the point now where Puerto Rico can't pay make the interest payments on these bonds, much less pay back principal. I'm sorry, continue.
Oh, no, absolutely. And you know, we're going to be running out of time. And, you know, I didn't want to make this a three-part discussion on Puerto Rico, or, you know, a three-day program on Puerto Rico. But it is important because it mirrors what's happening here in the United States. Because these bankers and the Wall Street and the politicians, they don't care. They're going to push. They're going to get people to borrow, promising all these returns. They knew there was a problem. And guess who gets out first? The banks get out first. The politicians get out first.
They sell it. Is alive and well.
Yeah. Yes, they sell it to the poor people so they can get out. Even when you would think Puerto Rico and the banks would turn away from the bond business, they just did the opposite. In 2014, Puerto Rico and a group of banks teamed up for another bond deal. $3.5 billion. It was the largest municipal junk bond offering in U.S. history. And we're out of time. So this does have me fired up, ladies and gentlemen. I will continue this one. Oh, maybe tomorrow with Pastor Butch, so we don't go another 2 days, and we'll finish this up. So please join us tomorrow. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Thank you, Dave. I'll be back tomorrow again with Butch Paul. Until then, be safe. Good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.